Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Catch us on the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And we got to get ready. It is Thursday of Conference Championship weekend. We're coming off one of the best weekends in the NFL's recent history in the divisional round here. And so for more on the follow-up act and where to try and go and get our money right here, we're getting back with our friend Aaron Dolan, ESPN sports betting analyst, who joins us now on the hotline. Aaron, how you doing?
I am great. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We're doing great. We're glad to have you back around here. You've been making everyone around this show money, and so we're going to try and keep that gravy train rolling heading into this weekend. And
yes.
Aaron, we'll get to plenty on this weekend, but I do want to point out, we were talking about some of the odds-on favorites for the Super Bowl still. We're still 2 weeks away. You can still bet on the futures market there. What kind of shifts have you seen on that? Is there still value to be had in that market looking towards Super Bowl Sunday?
Yes, of course. Now, I think when people think of the futures market, they really want to have those long shot tickets and really cash out at the end of the season, but there's still value in this market. Of the four remaining teams, the biggest shifts that we've seen in this market are the Bengals and the 49ers, which isn't too surprising, but the Bengals actually got as high as 150-1 after a week two loss to Chicago. And then, of course, they're now plus 750. As for the 49ers, they got as high as 125-1, and they've also come down. And then you have the Rams and Chiefs down there. The Rams actually, their longest odds, 14-1, was in the preseason. So their longest in-season odds weren't as drastic, just 13-1. That was after a three-game losing skid. And then the Chiefs, you're lucky if you got them at 13-1. That was after a loss to the Titans, and then they ripped off eight straight wins. But there definitely is value here because, let's say, for the Chiefs, as an example, plus 130 in the futures market right now. You're going to see that flip to minus money if they do beat the Bengals. And we already have the look-ahead lines for the Super Bowl posted, and they are going to be favored over the Rams or the 49ers. So, like I mentioned, there is still value to be had, so it shouldn't be overlooked.
Aaron, in looking at the conference championship games, the Chiefs are home favorites by 7, and then the Rams are home favorites 3.5 points. How are you playing these weekend's games?
So my recommendation on playing these games, as I've recommended in the wild card round, the divisional round, everybody wants to bet on the end result, but you really don't have to do that. There's hundreds, it feels like at this point, thousands of markets available. I know it takes some time to deep dive into them, but something that's been profitable for me is isolating team totals, first half spreads. You can definitely look at certain player props as well. A good example of this was last week. I was really on Mahomes getting over 25.5 rushing yards because it was an area that I knew he could exploit potentially on the Bills, despite having the number one ranked defense. They were in the middle of the pack in terms of the run. So considering he smashed this, what I would recommend is you find a particular area on a team that you know another team can exploit, and then find a market that correlates with that research. And also, something that's different than last week is we got these player props dropping on Monday. Usually we don't see these till, you know, today, Thursday, Friday. Some of them aren't even posted yet, but you can also track and see where the market finds value in certain props. Jimmy G is a great example of this. His passing yards opened 238.5. It moved down to 231.5 and continues to move down. I've seen it as low as 226.5, but now it's on the upward swing. It's now back at 228.5. So, again, you can really track your props for the week.
So, Aaron, with that in mind, are there any props that you really like heading into this weekend that you've already got circled on your calendar?
Yes, I do. Chris Jones to record a sack. Now, we have a situation where the Bengals are not great at protecting Joe Burrow. I mean, he was sacked 9 times against Tennessee. He's had 11 sacks so far this postseason. Not to mention, he was sacked 51 times during the regular season. Now, Chris Jones was able to sack him twice when they already played, so I think he's going to get some at least once in this game. Another one is Evan McPherson. His prop is set at over 6.5 total kicking points. He has had 27 points in the last two games. He's had more points, 13, the Bengals win over Tennessee, than the team did in touchdowns, and I just think he could end up being pretty clutch in that game. Another one that I like that stands out also for a few reasons is the Rams -3 in the first half. Now, the Rams are 4-1 against the spread in the first half over the last 5 games. They covered 3 straight. They were up 21-0 on the Cardinals, 20-3 on the Buccaneers. And when these teams last met, they were up 17-3. So we know the Rams tend to fall apart in that second half of games. As you can tell, they're great at covering that first half spread. But it's interesting to see Rams -3, and then for the entire game, it's -3.5. Usually that first half spread is typically cut in half. that goes to show that odds makers do believe the Rams could jump out to a quick start.
Awesome, Aaron, stuff to keep an eye on. My bad, Chris. Go ahead.
No, and Aaron, I just wanted to dive a little bit closer into these conference championship games because we got the over-under totals on that, and I wanted to ask you, if you were forced to make a play on both games when it comes to point total, which direction would you lean?
Yeah, so I really, for the first game, Bengals-Chiefs, I don't like the 7 at all. I'm going to wait and see if that jumps up to 7.5 or 6.5 before this game kicks off, because that will be really interesting to see. Maybe that's some sharp money coming in on one side. As for the total, everybody for that game is at 54.5, is loving the over. I'm pretty sure all the public money is on the over for that one. So considering how they played last time with 65 combined points, I would lean over. But again, I'm really into isolating the different markets. Then for the 49ers-Rams game, it's kind of tough not to take the 3.5 with the 49ers. I mean, they beat this team 6 straight games. They figured out, you know, ways to win. And the 49ers, we also have to remember, they just beat the Cowboys and the Packers. Like, they are actually no joke when it comes to beating these really tough teams. So if they figured out a way to win, I wouldn't be too surprised. But I do like the under as well for the 49ers-Rams, under 45.5. I don't think it's going to be a very high-scoring game.
Great stuff to keep an eye on. You guys can check out Aaron across ESPN on the Daily Wager. Get up all over the place here. Aaron, we always appreciate you giving us some time. Thanks so much, and good luck with the bets this weekend.
Thank you for having me. Good luck.
Chris, she mentioned something about the Rams that I think is fascinating, and I saw the crew talking about this on NFL Live the other day. The second half collapses that we've seen in all
yes.
of this. And we know for the 49ers, listen, going back to the Super Bowl that the Kansas City Chiefs won, they're no stranger to that either, but it's really been remarkable for a team that has not won anything at the highest level. Normally, you think of a team like the Chiefs that maybe you're so used to going out there and kicking folks' teeth in, they take their foot off the gas in the second half. That bit of lemon booty that we saw from the Rams in the second half of both of these games has been insane.
You've been hanging out with Dominique Foxworth too much using that term, by the
know,
way.
Man.
But I'm sorry, I had to check Omaha and go off script right there at the end with Aaron because I'm sitting here building my parlay in my head. She says she loves the 49ers getting the 3.5 points, and how could you not, because they've won 6 straight over the Rams. But then also she likes the under on point total in this game, and then you could actually go a step further and isolate the Rams in the second half, whether it's third quarter or fourth quarter, and go under on the team point total with the Rams. So I'm just sitting there putting all of this in my head, trying to figure out how I can make some coin on conference championship weekend, Gojo.
I did see you were like the full Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover doing all the math outside of your head in that one. Listen, though, Aaron's been riding a couple of heaters for the last few weekends here. These isolated bets have worked out really well. And again, if we know the Rams tend to come out of that halftime locker room, lull to sleep a little bit, maybe catch some life and put this away in the fourth quarter, it's all great stuff to keep an eye on as we all just try and line our pockets during the NFL postseason here, because if there's money to be had, it should be ours. I am a firm believer in that. So again, you guys can check out at Aaron Kate Dolan on Twitter. She'll keep you updated on a lot of those bets so you can be like Chris and build your parlay heading into the weekend. Coming up next, though, coaching hires starting to come off the board around the NFL here. The Broncos made it official with Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. Does that all but end the conversation about where Aaron Rodgers heads in 2022? We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
There is some breaking news. The Broncos are hiring Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett as their head coach.
Was that the first piece in getting Aaron Rodgers to Denver?
As is tradition with the Sports Talk Take Cycle, we couldn't just talk about Nathaniel Hackett and what his hire actually means for the Broncos. No, no, no. It's time to jump immediately to what does this mean for Aaron Bleeping Rodgers. It is Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And, Chris, that was the news that we saw today here. Nathaniel Hackett, the OC for the Green Bay Packers, hired by the Denver Broncos after Vic Fangio was let go here. We know, Chris, coming off back-to-back defensive-minded head coach, former D coordinators, offense seemed to probably be an area they were going to start to address, knowing their quarterback woes. Do you think this gets them any closer to that before we get to the Aaron Rodgers stuff?
Well, I think philosophically they're going in the right direction and hiring somebody on the offensive side of the ball, because it's clear that the culture that's been in place on that defense has yielded them the results that you're looking for. You're talking about them perennially being a top 10 defensive unit, and with a bad offense like they had last year, that's saying a whole lot. Like the defense being able to put up the metrics that they did with an offense that's not giving you a whole lot of help in the way of ball control and points, I think that group is solid. And so you've got to address the offensive side of the ball, and having a head coach that has that orientation it should help in terms of them being able to figure some things out. But Gojo, I'm not sure that the Denver Broncos got the right guy, because this feels like one of the steps that they're taking in order to try to make themselves as attractive as they possibly can for Aaron Rodgers if he would want to be traded out of Green Bay. If you don't get Aaron Rodgers with the Denver Broncos this offseason, is Nathaniel Hackett the guy that you necessarily want you to lead you into the foreseeable future? That's the part that I don't know. I can't get inside of John Elway's head. But if that's not the case, then I struggle to see the value add with Hackett being your head coach, because you're really only talking about that one season with him in Jacksonville as the offensive coordinator, where they went to the AFC Championship game and they had a top five offense with Blake Bortles. Outside of that, there really isn't a whole lot on his resume that gives me confidence that he can do the job at a high level.
I will say this, Chris, and this is always, I think, some of the questions that you weigh when you're hiring a coordinator to be the head coach. If he does decide to continue to call plays as the head coach, it's something he's done before. Now, we know in Green Bay, that was Matt LaFleur's offense, Aaron Rodgers' presence there, clouds all that. But you mentioned he did call the plays when it came to his time in Jacksonville. I believe he called plays in Buffalo when he was there prior to that, too. So he's got that on the resume, Chris. But to your point, it is a gamble, although Adam Schefter, ESPN NFL insider, went on Keyshawn, J1 Max this morning and said that this hire didn't have anything to do with Aaron Rodgers.
The Broncos picked the coach that they believed would be the best fit for their organization, that would be the best move to change their culture. The fact that he knew Aaron Rodgers, that's a cherry on top. Don't get me wrong. It's not, oh boy, it's not nothing key. But I don't believe that's why they went after him, for all the conspiracy theorists, right? Oh, we're going to go hire Hackett and then go get Rodgers. Like, look, they may be thinking that. I wouldn't be surprised. They wanted Rodgers last year. But I don't think that's why they hired Hackett.
And, Chris, we know part of this can also be the coaching tree there, right? You've got a guy that's now been touched by that Matt LaFleur coaching tree, which we know is connected to the old Shanahan tree, which they know all about there in Denver, getting some of that run and cut zone back out there with some of those modern elements that we've seen sprinkled into these offenses. That could certainly be appealing because, Chris, even if it's not Aaron Rodgers, what we've talked about for Denver for the last couple of years is creating an environment that is hospitable and welcoming that any quarterback, free agent or otherwise, would want to come and drop into. And maybe you could sell that even if you shoot for Aaron Rodgers and miss, which there's no doubt, Chris, this does help you if the pursuit is Aaron Rodgers. Having someone he's familiar with, also surrounded by all the weapons we talk about that offense, at the very least, you continue to make this a place that seems fertile if you are someone that wants to come and give them help at that position.
No, you're right, but who's the person that's going to step in? I mean, I don't. If it's not Aaron Rodgers, is Russell Wilson looking at the Denver Broncos as a viable option? I'm not sure. I mean, if you look at all the other prospective free agent quarterbacks, it's essentially running back the same situation that you had last year with Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke. I don't know how they're going to be markedly better because Nathaniel Hackett takes over the job if you're talking about them having to get another stopgap quarterback. Now, if you're saying that Hackett has a little bit of a longer runway and that you could potentially draft and develop a quarterback, that's a different story. And then, again, that begs the question, is this the right guy to develop said quarterback if you're going to go the route of a younger guy? So I have a lot of questions, and I don't necessarily think that Nathaniel Hackett was the most qualified offensive mind that was going to be available in this head coaching cycle. But this is the choice that John Elway and Joe Ellis have made, and so I guess this is what you're going to roll with. I do think it does make sense to shift from the personalities of the last head coaches that you have in Vance Joseph and Vic Fangio and go with somebody that's on the offensive side of the ball, because clearly that's the area of need. But that's also an area where you have a lot of young developing players. You have Jerry Jeudy on the offensive side of the ball. You have Javonte Williams. You've got Noah Fant. Those are young guys that have a chance to develop into really special players at their respective positions. And you want to have a coordinator in place that you can take full advantage of that.
What you just mentioned there, too, I think is worth noting. what kind of runway are any of these coaches getting? Because, Chris, we're in an offseason that's got 9 head coaching vacancies here. Normally, the average year, it's probably 6 or 7. Like, this has been a bit unprecedented. And we've talked in recent years when it comes to drafting quarterbacks like the Cardinals did, first-round quarterbacks in back-to-back years, young GMs being a bit more aggressive. I think we've also seen owners become increasingly more impatient because they see some of the overnight turnarounds in places like the Cincinnati Bengals, certainly with some of the coaches connected to Matt LaFleur and that coaching tree hadn't been able to do for their franchises here. Do you think that ultimately is going to be a trend we see continue? Because it seems hard to be sustainable, even in a league that sort of demands that sort of quick microwave results.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at right now in today's NFL. It's no longer we're going to give a guy 3-4 years to establish his program. This is going to be, you know, a couple of years to see where you're at. And then if we don't like what we see, then we're going to pivot. I mean, not that the New York Giants are the standard by any stretch, but you've seen what they've done with their last 3 head coaches. You're talking about them having 3 head coaches over the course of the last 6 seasons. So I think it's just a product of organizations making a decision to try to find the quarterback and then knowing that it's not as steep of a learning curve when it comes to getting that quarterback acclimated to life in the NFL because you're doing a lot more passing at the lower levels of sport and you're getting more refined products coming out of the college ranks. So that's why owners and organizations are becoming less patient with coaches because they're assuming that quarterbacks can step in a lot earlier in their careers and be productive players. And Gojo, we know that there's no more valuable commodity in the NFL than a quarterback that's on a rookie contract. And so I think that's what's starting to play a part in organizations being a little more aggressive when it comes to trying to have early success with their new head coaches.
It's so true. Life that has changed in the NFL since that 2011 collective bargaining agreement, where now all of a sudden, you're right, that's the greatest weapon that you have in organization and roster building now in the modern NFL. So we'll continue to watch as the dominoes fall. We saw Matt Eberflus now heading in Chicago to coach the Bears. All these changes that are starting to happen. But coming up next, what they're trying to do is pull off exactly what the Cincinnati Bengals have. As that journey continues down the postseason this weekend, we'll talk to a very prominent Bengals fan about how different life has changed and life has become in the Natty now that Joe Burrow and the boys have taken over. We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. All right, guys, this is it. This is your Wendy's wake-up call. It's time to get a better breakfast, and you get that better breakfast at Wendy's when you buy any breakfast sandwich and get any size drink for free. Fresh brewed coffee, free. Diet Coke, free. Vanilla Frosty Chino, hell yeah, also free. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and buy your Wendy's breakfast sandwich and get any size drink in a Wendy's cup for free. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours. This offer cannot be combined with another mobile offer, not valid for a third-party delivery order. Back after this, Caney and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Let's Grim be the Grim Reaper. And go get it. Go get it.
Mahomes throwing left, caught, touchdown, just that easy to Travis Kelce.
He definitely don't want to lose to the same team twice. That'll give you a long offseason to think about.
Burrow out of the shotgun is going to go deep right for Chase. He's got it! Touchdown, Cincinnati!
Oh, that one was fun.
Whenever it seems improbable, you know that Joe Burrow and the weapons around him are going to do something.
Caney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Caney. And it has been that kind of exciting year, certainly in the NFL playoffs overall, but definitely for the Bengals. My Uncle Brian's a diehard Bengals fan. It has been his entire life, Chris. He's in his 40s. Saw a video of a grown man weeping last weekend after the Bengals pulled that off over the one seed Tennessee Titans. And I'd imagine he had a fair amount of company in Cincinnati. So for more on what the glow-up has been like for Bengals fans, let's head out to the hotline now and talk to Gary Owen, comedian, actor, and most importantly for this conversation, Bengals fan. Gary, how has this ride been for you so far?
Well, I'm not used to it. It's so different. In the past, I'm so used to like us falling apart in the second half, and now like we go to halftime, I'm like, we're good. When they're down by 14, we're good.
It's been pretty incredible here, Caney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Gary, to that, and let's start with the guy in the middle, the reason for probably all that. Joe Burrow, do you remember what your first thought was when you saw the Cincinnati Bengals went and picked Joe Burrow with that first draft pick?
Well, if you go to my social media, my Instagram, I FaceTime Joe Mixon. And I because, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was tank for Tua was the thing. And then it was like Tua or Burrow. And then him being from Athens, Ohio, which I don't know if you've ever been to Athens, Ohio. But if you have $40,000, you can buy a five-bedroom house in Athens. There's not a lot there. So the fact that he came out of a small town like that where nothing was there. And in Athens High School, they're terrible in everything. But when Burrow was there, went to the state finals, goes to LSU, and they were good but not great. And then he leaves and he went back to good. So I'm like, the proof is in the pudding. Wherever he goes, he wins. And now he's got us an AFC championship. I don't know what to do with my hands. This is crazy.
Gary, the word on the street is you got a custom pair of Jordan 4s with the Bengals logo kind of on those things, and you're waiting to break them out when they go to the Super Bowl. How confident are you you're going to have a chance to wear those this year?
I'm going to wear them February 13th.
Watch. Ooh. you said that with your chest, too. So you believe that.
I appreciate the confidence that Bengals fans are now endowed with. We're talking to Gary Owen, comedian and actor with us on Canty and Golic Jr., diehard Bengals fan. Gary, I think these stories are great for Bengals fans because there were so many tough years. Like, do you remember the lowest year for you? Like, the point where it got the most bleak as a Bengals fan that's made this season that much sweeter?
I don't want to say, like, season, but our two darkest moments in the last 20 years was both playoff games against the Steelers. Because we had the Steelers number the year Palmer went down with Kimo von Ohlhofen because he dropped that 60-yard dime to Chris Henry. And I just remember, this is a funny story, I'm in Kansas City, of all cities, I'm in my hotel room, and Palmer throws that bomb to Henry. He catches it, and then I see Palmer on the ground, and I said a lot of four-letter words at the hotel. They called security and the police came and they thought there was a domestic abuse dispute incident because I was screaming and then I would get back to my normal voice and I would scream. So they thought I was in there with the girls and I was screaming and there was an argument, but I was yelling at the TV. And I guess my voice got so high pitched, like the cops came in dying laughing because they said, "Where's the girl?" And I was like, "What?" And they came in and searched my room. And I told them, "Oh, the Bengals game's on. Palmer went down."
Gary, I know you're excited about Sunday's game and what's been happening this magical season that Cincinnati has been on. But when you take a step back and look at the future for this Bengals team, they're the first franchise in NFL history to have a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard rusher, and 2,000-yard receivers all under the age of 26. How excited are you about the future for this Bengals team?
Well, I mean, it's no secret. We do need some improvements on the offensive line. And if I'm on my second contract, if I'm pushing 30 and I'm a tackle or a guard, who doesn't want to come to Cincinnati? Cost of living isn't that bad. We got Starbucks, we got Target, we got everything other major city has, and we got a franchise quarterback and everybody's young. Why don't you want to come here? Come on.
Gary, you mentioned you FaceTimed Joe Mixon when the Joe Burrow pick happened. So getting to know guys around this team here, what has it been like seeing that change inside the locker room of the way that these guys approach all this?
Well, it starts from the top down. Like the Zach Taylor is such a player's coach. You hear that term thrown around a lot, but I like the trend that seems to be going on with the NFL. They're hiring head coaches in their 30s. That can relate to the players, and we're back to letting guys celebrate in the end zone as long as they're not taunting the other team, but they're celebrating their success. And they get to show their personality, and the fact that you got Burrow in there doing the gat, you know, the Louisiana thing. I'm not doing it right, clearly. That was terrible. I shouldn't have did that. But but it's just it's a vibe. Like, you see them out, and everybody just gets along. And if you follow everybody on their social media pages, they celebrate everyone else's success. Because Ja'Marr Chase had a couple weeks where he only had a catch or two, but he still was posting Higgins and Boyd and Mixon. Because, I mean, generally they're winning, which makes everything easier, but they're happy for everyone else's success. There's no selfish players on the team.
Gary, do you look at Mahomes and Joe Burrow potentially having that rivalry that we saw with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, all those years that they competed against each other to get to the Super Bowl out of the AFC?
That'd be nice. And then you got to throw in Josh Allen. He's like Big Ben. So I'll take it. If you want to do Bills, Chiefs, and Bengals, the top three, and everybody else fights it out below us, I'll take it in a heartbeat. Listen, we've been at the bottom for a while. We're Drake at the beginning of the song. We started from the bottom. We're not there yet. We're not at the end of the song, but February 13th, yeah, now we're here.
I can say, hopefully for you Bengals fans and for that great pair of Jordans that we saw on your Instagram page, things go well for the Bengals this weekend, and you guys do get to enjoy that trip to Los Angeles for the Super Bowl. Check out the Get Some podcast. Check out his comedy show, Gary Owen, always crushing it. We appreciate the time. Try and enjoy this weekend as best that you and Bengals fans can.
I'm going to do my best. Oh, can Sunday get here?
Hey, listen, from your lips to God's ears on that one. Gary Owen, check him out. At Gary Owen Comedy on Twitter is where you can find out more information on him, his tour, and everything else he's got going on here. You guys can also tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts here. Chris, it is so strange to hear Bengals fans, like our own Jordan Cornette, like I mentioned, my Uncle Gary, get to walk around with some pride now. You spent a lot of time in the AFC North in that division. This turnaround where we have talked about them at the top of the AFC North feels strange and uncomfortable to everyone involved.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Gojo. But the thing that's beautiful about it is they're not acting like they've been here before, because they really haven't in the course of the last 30 years. And so they're just celebrating this success. They're peacocking, and they absolutely should be, because this has been a long, suffering fan base. So like Gary Owens and the rest of the Bengals fans out there, I ain't mad at them for them going out there and having the confidence in their team going into Arrowhead on Sunday and being able to compete.
I always tell the story, linebacker teammate of mine, Torian Smith at Notre Dame, scoop scored a fumble against Navy, somersaulted in the end zone, got flagged for it. When asked about it after the game, said, "Some people say act like you've been there before. I act like I'm never going back." Cincinnati, I ain't mad at you for that one, not one bit, heading into this weekend. But coming up next, we have talked about on this show one team we believe needs to go all in this offseason. We will hear from their owner, who made it abundantly clear he feels the same damn way. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, we always joke, the postseason, once you get the coaching firings, the job openings, get a little bit of talking season in there, right? A lot of things that start to get floated out about there. And with nine openings this year, we've seen a lot of people interviewed, a lot of rumors about who's going to go where. But we always know there's certain voices that cut through when you're trying to figure out who to listen to. Jerry Jones with the Dallas Cowboys is always a good example of when we want to know what's happening there. Another owner laid it out pretty clearly, what he expects from his team going forward and what he believes you need to win in the NFL right now. Jim Irsay, the owner for the Indianapolis Colts, put it on wax 3 days ago on Twitter. He said, quote, "You can see clear as day in the NFL's final 8-team playoff. You need a quarterback and an offense who can score 30 or more in regulation, and a defense who can hold an opponent to under 30 with a football emoji." And Chris, all that is to say, for a team that's been pretty non-committal towards Carson Wentz going into next year, this seems like the clearest push and the clearest example of we've seen them publicly saying, yeah, we hear you guys and we're with it too. We probably have to start pushing the chips into the table. That sounds like a guy who's ready to attack the quarterback position this offseason.
Yeah, Gojo, do you hear that? I'm wondering if you hear that. That's the sound of me patting myself on the back, because I said this before and I'll say it again. In terms of being aggressive, the Indianapolis Colts are an organization, a team that has everything that a prospective quarterback would be looking for in order to compete at a high level. They've got a really good offensive line led by Quentin Nelson, who's one of the best at his position in the entire NFL. You have an MVP candidate in the backfield in Jonathan Taylor. You've got a top 10 defense consistently thanks to Matt Eberflus, even though he's taken off to be the Bears head coach. But the pieces are in place right there. All you need is the right trigger man, and I think this is Jim Irsay's way of giving license to Chris Ballard, their general manager, and Frank Reich to go big game hunting this offseason. Draft capital be damned, cap space be damned, go after a guy that you feel like can deliver us a championship. And we know that there are going to be a couple of quarterbacks that are in the trade market that seem like they make a whole lot of sense. Aaron Rodgers would be chief among them. I wouldn't rule out Russell Wilson. We know Deshaun Watson is going to be on the move, but I highly doubt that Nick Caserio is going to trade him in the division. But there are going to be quarterbacks that are elite at that position that are there to be had via trade. And Chris Ballard and Frank Reich need to get on board with trying to find one yet again in a consecutive offseason.
So that's going to be the interesting charge there. Chris, you brought up a name before that might be relevant this offseason as well. Derek Carr and what the future looks like for the Las Vegas Raiders could also be a quarterback. Extremely intriguing, but I'm with you. I will be stunned if they don't land one of these high veteran valued quarterbacks this offseason based on what they can offer you as an organization. We know that's going to be the case more than likely for the Indianapolis Colts. But Chris, we just saw this from ESPN's Cowboys reporter Ed Werder here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, about another job. Because earlier today, one of the bits of news we hadn't seen and hadn't got to talk about yet was just how big of a win it was for the Cowboys that Dan Quinn, their defensive coordinator, had made it clear he was returning to the Dallas Cowboys. He had had some head coaching interviews during this offseason. But Ed Werder followed that up and said, I can confirm, and this is courtesy of his Twitter, that the Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy has been told he'll return in 2022, as expected, even though team owner and GM Jerry Jones has declined to commit publicly. So, Chris, I think that's not shocking. I don't think Dan Quinn would have been coming back in that role if things were going to change. But at the very same time, we didn't think, even after the retirement of Sean Payton, that change was coming this year for them at that spot.
No, I don't think it's going to happen this year because it would have been too tough in order to try to swing a deal with the New Orleans Saints, a team that's also in the NFC, in order to bring over Sean Payton. The asking price was going to be through the moon, and we know a year removed from that situation, that could potentially go down. Even though the Saints would have his rights, the Saints wouldn't be able to capitalize on anything of significance if Sean Payton didn't agree to come out of retirement. So it changes it from that standpoint for Jerry Jones. But you're right. If you can't go out there and get the head coach that you want, the guy that you've been over the moon about and you've been glowing about openly, then it makes sense to keep it pushing with Mike McCarthy and trying to retain as many people on your staff as you possibly can. Just so happened that the dominoes fell your way with Dan Quinn being able to come back and, you know, oversee that defense, which has had one of the biggest turnarounds of any individual unit that we've seen in 2021. And then we'll see what happens with Kellen Moore, but signs important to him returning in his offensive coordinator role. So being able to have that continuity in the staff and then being able to have the strides you made with the key players on the defensive side of the ball that are continuing to develop, we'll see what the Cowboys can do in 2022. But Mike McCarthy is on notice because Jerry Jones not coming out and giving him a vote of confidence and then Sean Payton potentially being out there in 2023 lets him know that he's going into 2022 with one of the hottest seats in the National Football League. If this team doesn't get to the championship rounds, then you're probably talking about Mike McCarthy not being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, I think what you mentioned there about continuity is going to be huge in the immediacy. Like when Dan Quinn announced he was coming back, it made me think of how lucky the Bills got with Brian Daboll, who was a head coaching candidate last offseason, coming back for the development of Josh Allen. The young pieces on the Dallas defense won. But to your point, Ed Werder's tweet made the point, Jerry Jones has declined to commit publicly. Until we hear something, and if we do hear something from Jerry on this front, it's going to be important. Because if not, every single time the Cowboys lost or get into a situation that starts to look grim next year, the headline on First Take and every other show is going to be about Sean Payton and his future as the coach of that organization. That's going to be the challenge for that team heading into next year with that hanging over their heads, though Ed Werder reports now confirming Mike McCarthy has been told he'll return in 2022. Coming up next, let's look at some of the philosophy for other teams making coaching decisions about where they go and which side of the ball for that spot.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.